This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. An art student in Leeds, England decided one day to trade in his paintbrushes for drumsticks. He was inspired by punk rock songs like Clash's White Riot. But John Langford and his band, the Mekons, had never been in a riot. There you go, a little bit of Never Been in a Riot by the Mekons. John Langford preferred to write about more ordinary everyday experiences, and that accessibility of content is what drew him to country music, and you can hear those influences in his later band, the Waco Brothers.
Bad times are coming around, bad times are coming around, bad times are coming around again. You might need a drink, but you don't need a weather vane.
A little bit of Bad Times Are Coming Around by the Waco Brothers, and today John Langford has a new solo album with his backing band Skull Orchard. It's called Here Be Monsters. John's going to perform songs from that album at the Contemporary Art Museum in Raleigh on Friday at 7 o'clock. But first, he talks with us. John Langford, welcome. Good to have you on the program.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Tell us, take us back to those earlier days. What drew you to punk while you were an art student?
Well, you know, it was just a very seismic moment in British history right then, culturally. It was Britain's very small, and the Sex Pistols coming around was a huge, huge thing. And there was only like one TV channel at the time that showed pop music. So it's like everyone in the country had an opinion about punk rock. And of course, us being the younger generation, we were like all for it. And painting suddenly seemed very boring and a better way of addressing our interests in like politics and, you know, just generally being creative was through the medium of punk rock.
And you did, and you certainly remained faithful to that political strand of punk. You raised money in 1984 for the miners' strike in England. Tell us about that.
Well, the band had kind of fallen into disarray at that time, and we were sort of in our bedrooms noodling with synthesizers and drum machines. And when the miners' strike happened, we just really felt like we should get out there and do something. And all the people I knew were going out on the picket lines and trying to support the miners, and we felt that it was kind of movement to do benefit shows to raise money for them, because they were basically being starved back to work by Margaret Thatcher and her cronies. So it went on for a year. It was a really serious piece of, you know, political history in Britain. And we did loads of gigs, and all those gigs produced a lot of songs. And then the album, which a lot of people think of as our kind of comeback album, Fear and Whiskey, when we really integrated our love of American country and Western music with the punk rock. That came out in 1985, and most of those songs were basically about our experiences during the miners' strike and our feelings about that.
Tell me about that, about this idea that music is one way to become more politically active, because as we've seen, certainly, and I think this was certainly going on even back in the 80s, that music tends to be, it can isolate groups in the sense that, you know, certain demographic groups identify with certain kinds of music, and so do you find yourself kind of preaching to the choir, even though you have a powerful and deeply emotional as well as intellectual message?
What attracted me to punk in the first place was that it was actually in England, it was very cross-cultural. You know, there was a lot of reggae influence in it. You know, the Clash and the Specials, bands like that. Really, kind of, you know, there was a lot of racism in especially in the north of England where we lived in 1978. We were very involved in the Rock Against Racism movement, and there was, you know, actually it was a campaign that actually kind of achieved things. I think when the Specials had a number one hit with Ghost Town, you know, it was a multiracial band playing a kind of weird punk rock blend of reggae music. It was a very exciting time. I never really thought of it. I always thought of punk rock not as a kind of stylistic cul-de-sac, which it did become. And right. It became like a tribal thing. For us, it was like an opening up of things and a breaking down of those barriers.
So, and I know you've raised funds for a lot of other causes and been influenced by funk, and you just made reference to country. Was that a leap for you to get yourself into
country?
It was
a leap. I thought, you know, I thought country music, when I was in my 20s, I thought country music was this kind of reactionary white old people's music, and then I actually listened to it and listened to Merle Haggard, George Jones, Jerry Lee Lewis, people like that, And I realized that there was something going on. There was real parallels between what we were trying to do with punk rock, or at least what the Mekons were trying to do, was write very simple songs that described our immediate situation, you know, our politics, maybe with a small p. Rather, we didn't really go in for the smash the system sort of thing. We were mostly singing about, you know, failed sexual relationships and drinking in bars. And it became apparent that, you know, country music covered the same ground quite well.
And you didn't exactly give up your paintbrushes. You've painted many of your country music influences in a compilation called Nashville Radio. Tell us about that.
Well, when I moved to the States, I was quite shocked that the country, the honky-tonk culture that I'd, you know, we fantasized about so much was pretty much gone. And we, you know, they moved the Grand Ole Opry out to the suburbs and they built a shopping mall next to it. And it was just not what I imagined. And artists that I revered, it found that they were kind of like completely disrespected and couldn't even get on country radio. I talked to Johnny Cash in 1988. We made a tribute album of Johnny Cash songs, and he supported it and got behind it, and we met him. And I think the reason he got behind it, because he was at the kind of very bottom of his career. He was like looking down the barrel of Branson, Missouri, thinking he was going to be shipped off to play to coach loads of old-age pensioners for the rest of his life. And he was quite excited that a bunch of British punk rockers had recorded his songs. But I was shocked by that, and I started making visual images again of country and Western artists, just because I love the old publicity photos. I went into Tootsie's Orchid Lounge in Nashville. I don't know if you've ever been in there, but it's an amazing kind of like graveyard to country music. There's all these publicity photos up on the walls that are torn and ripped, and they've been up there for 50, 60 years, and they're covered in this kind of layer of nicotine kind of gunk, and it's really kind of amazing.
How about your new album, Here Be Monsters? How would you say that's different, or is it, from previous works?
This is the most sort of complete kind of amalgamation of the painting and the songwriting. And that, the guy who put it out is a guy called Bill McGathy, who has a label called Indigoot Records. And he didn't know anything about my music, but he bought several paintings from me from my gallery Yard Dog down in Austin, Texas. And his wife had even commissioned me to do some drawings so he could have tattoos of my artwork on his arms. And it's only after that, after he was fully illustrated with my work, that he came around to actually listening to my music. And he came to a few gigs and was kind of just thought it'd be nice if there was some way we could work together on a package that produced, you know, that really brought the artwork and the painting together. Because to my mind, they come from the same part of my brain. A couple of the songs came about as a series of notes I made for paintings I was going to make. I was actually going to make a box set of prints of kind of like an alternative astrology almost, where I was going to make star maps with things that were important to me up in the sky. Like, you know, I did a number of paintings where the Joe Strummer was floating next to Moby Dick, next to a drone missile, next to a kind of, a, you know, symbols of nuclear power and things like that. And just things from my, you know, my life, and sticking them up in the sky and making maps out of them. And that was kind of a visual idea. And then the songs, a couple of songs came directly from that.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about drone operator for one. There's a, you know, sort of derisive term now for the people who launch drones. They're talking about the Air Force, right, instead of the Air Force. But but it's represented in your painting of what it looks like a war monument to a guy sitting in a chair, but with a very deadly drone over his head.
Well, for me, it's like, you know, it's a statue. It was a statue that I thought of would be, you know, an interesting or fitting monument to this drone campaign, which I see as reckless and possibly illegal. And I just hate the idea that I live in this country. I love America so much, and there's so many great things about American people in the rest of the world now, and specifically in places like Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Yemen, think of America as kind of like, you know, like the Ewoks think about Darth Vader in Star Wars 3, you know, or Star Wars 6, depending on, well, depending on where you sit on that issue. So I don't know. I was amazed as well that the Obama administration continued with that. And I think it makes me feel there's a real moral vacuum at the very heart of government, and makes me wonder about what sort of person would do that job. It's kind of like a sort of high-tech version of stalking and murder. You know.
Let's listen to a piece of that song right now.
Like a god with a thunderbolt, sitting on a big white cloud.
I'm a drone operator with targets to scan.
Targeted.
I sit drinking coffee with one eye on the ground in the tribal lounge.
We go a little bit of drone operator, and John Lankford is the author of that song and the painting to go with it. Which comes first for you, the visuals or the music, or how does it work?
I think with that, if the song came first. But it's interesting, what you just played was actually from the video, which it's his, a friend of mine, a Moroccan filmmaker called Hassan Amajal, and he made a video of the song in which he appears and he sings some poetry himself, and he's got all these little sound effects that he put on, which I think is kind of makes it even more interesting.
Another song on the album called Little Ray of Light. Tell us about that song.
I saw a kind of famous figure from the 60s once get up on stage, and people wanted him to sing some of his hits, and he decided to read a short story, which was his own obituary, and it was basically about how nobody could ever understand him and how tortured and suffering he was. And it was I just thought, you know, there's a lot of that in pop celebrity, you know, these people with loads of money and fame, and then sort of like self-pitying themselves. So it's not autobiographical, this song.
Let's hear a little bit of it.
Never found a subject so much to my liking. All the puff pieces and picks of the week, never got it right.
Never came close.
They always miss the point. I'm disappointed, misrepresenting me. They can't see my head, there's so many mansions full of blinding sights.
There we go, a little ray of light. Yeah, I've always been annoyed by pop stars who, don't want to do the song that made them famous and made them rich. It's like, why do you think you're...
I will always do the song that make me famous and rich when I write it.
As soon as that happens.
As soon as that happens.
Very well. Now, so tell us about your event at CAM Raleigh, the Contemporary Art Museum here in Raleigh.
Well, Sally Timms from the Mekons is going to come down with me, and we're going to do a kind of sort of spoken word thing. I think it'll probably be fairly unscripted because we don't really need a script, me and Sally, when we get talking. It's usually more of an issue to try and shut us up. And then we'll be performing some songs from Here Be Monsters, and also probably do some Mekons songs and maybe some Waco Brothers songs and songs from other parts of our sort of solo careers.
Mekon, by the way, the arch nemesis of a famous British comic book hero of the 50s, right?
Ah, you know about that. Yes, excellent. The Mekons were originally called Dan Dare and the Mekons. The reason we chose that name, if you've got time for a really weird anecdote, was that Andy, the original singer in the Mekons, mother was working in a nursing home in Ormskirk, Lancashire, and the guy who drew Dan Dare, who invented it, was called Frank Hampton, and she was actually nursing him at the time we started the band. And she said that he did this amazing science fiction comic strip, and she talked to him, and he drew everything from life, and he had costumes, like space costumes and everything. He had friends come around and stand in these spacesuits, and he would draw them from life, which is kind of mind-boggling to me.
Wow. Pretty amazing story. John, thank you so much for talking with us. But you took, I like the idea that you took the nemesis and not the superhero, ultimately, is the name of the band.
Always, always. That's kind of what this album's about, the Here Be Monsters album, is kind of the idea of who the real monsters, you know what I mean? It's not Moby Dick's the monster in that book, is it?
No, not at all. John, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Hey, nice to talk to you.
John Lankford, singer and songwriter, guitarist and visual artist. His new album is Here Be Monsters. He's going to perform at Contemporary Art Museum in Raleigh Friday at 7 o'clock. Thanks for listening to our program. Our website is stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Nicole Campbell, Megan Modafferi, and Anita Rao. Robin Copley is the technical director. Brent Wolf is our news director. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.